Hi, and welcome to Aging in Place for every stage in life. What if you could visit or have a home that would accommodate anyone at any age, any physical ability, at any time? How cool would that be? That's what we're doing here at Aging in Place. Why me? Because I'm a doctor of psychology, and I specialize in physical spaces and health and wellness. Also, I love designing with intent at any age. Why now? Because we, the baby boomers, want to age in place gracefully, and we want our families around us as much as we can. And why you, the audience? Because we want you to experience what it's like to have a home that's safe, aesthetically pleasing, and that you can live in at any age, with any ability, at any time. I'd like to introduce you now to Aging in Place podcast for every stage in life. Hi, and welcome to Aging in Place podcast for any stage in life. I'm Dr. Debbie Lines, and I'm here today with Dr. Stephen Golant. Did I say your name correctly, sir?
Very good.
Well, I really appreciate you joining us. And every now and then I become starstruck, and I think today is no different. I'm excited to chat with you because I followed you both on your blog and with the books that you've written. You have a very illustrious career, and I'm excited to be able to talk to you today. If you will, Stephen, can you share with me a little bit about your background?
Well, I originally was trained as a social geographer, which is probably unusual for your viewers. But I've always had a very eclectic career. When I started at the University of Chicago in my first position as assistant professor, I actually had a joint appointment between the Department of Geography and the Committee on Human Development. And the Committee on Human Development was one of the leading psychology departments in the world, actually, mm-hmm. studying how older people dealt with changes and challenges as they were getting old. So very early on, I had a very strong psychology plus environment perspective. So I was always concerned with how the places people lived made a difference in how well they aged. In effect, the idea being very simply, it matters where you grow old, that you don't grow old in some vacuum, some environmental vacuum, but rather you grow old in a place that can make it easier or more difficult, more challenging, more easier to deal with getting old.
What were some of the obvious things that you noticed right away?
Well, very clearly, it becomes very obvious that the ability of older people to maintain the independence, the autonomy that they've been accustomed to most of their lives, is often under siege as you get mm-hmm. older. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean, under siege? Because I hear that word, and because I've read a lot of what you've written, I understand. But for the people who may not know what you think that means.
Well, from everything from recovering from a hospital stay, and having to maintain a period of independence while you're recovering. Something very basic, such as getting around so that you can maintain your own self-maintenance and take care of everything that we take for granted, such as getting dressed and getting your food and making sure that you're as independent as possible, mm-hmm. getting around your community, mm-hmm. just reaching places. We know, for example, that older people dread the prospect of losing their license, for example.
Oh, yes, yes.
And then, of course, you have that a whole new complicated relationship that you really didn't have throughout much of your life. And that is how you relate to your family, whether you have a daughter, a son, a mm-hmm. daughter-in-law. And so, once again, It's a lot easier, for example, if you have a daughter living within 10 minutes of you and you're having difficulty dealing with
walking or getting to doctor's appointments.
Exactly. And as opposed to whether or not your daughter is living a good plane right away. So all these are contextual things. All these are outside the individual that make it easier or more difficult for that person to maintain that autonomy and that independence. And that's crucial. We, throughout our lives, we're continually interested in being independent. And what happens when you get older is as some things happen, your body changes.
Yes, it does.
sometimes your neighborhood changes. That makes it that much more challenging.
So you ended up, so I'm going to pull you back because we started out in geography and then into gerontology. Mm-hmm. And then how did you make the shift from geography into this area that you're studying now?
It's not a hard transition to make because one major inquiry of geographers is how environment matters. Mm-hmm. And you may think of environment as climate and geology, but environment is also the quality of your dwelling, whether or not it's accessible, the quality of your neighborhood, whether or not you have good friends there, whether or not your community has those resources to make it easier, or whether it has a religious institution that you feel comfortable, that you feel belonging to.
That's
so the notion of environment and gerontology is an easy transition to make. The main difference is I focused on looking at environmental issues from the point of view of old age.
And what's really interesting to me is I came at this backwards. I started out as an interior designer, interested in the health and wellness of spaces, and then went back and got a master's and doctorate in psych and kind of pulled it together that way. What fascinates me, though, is your emphasis on aging and the older adult. Now that I am qualified as an older adult, I find it even more fascinating because there are things, honestly, I try not to think about, but the more I've gotten into this this area, the more I want to know everything that I can about my options as I'm getting older. And I view it now from a much more holistic or public health point of view, I guess. Talk to me about, just in general, the aging adult. When we talk about gerontology, what all does that encompass?
So one of the things that becomes very clear is that the danger of making generalizations about getting old. And that, of course, comes under the rubric of ageism. And we're all guilty.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, we want to assume, for example, with the best of intentions, that some older people should avoid retirement because we view retirement as something that is passive and not productive, and as one of newspaper columnists pointed out to me, doing nothing. On the other hand, the idea that everyone should keep working until they drop is of course not for everyone. Some older people are comfortable, frankly, doing nothing. In one of my papers, I advocated that it's okay for older people to pursue a hedonistic lifestyle, pleasure for its own sake. And of course, we have community manifestations of a hedonistic lifestyle, and namely in the retirement villages that focus on leisure and golf and tennis and exercise and just having a good time. Now, is that a bad thing if you have a good time? But you have to be careful because there are prominent gerontologists, for example, who argue, that's a big waste of time. Why should you when you're still cognitively intact and physically able, why should you stop being productive? It's a waste of human resources, they would argue. So even the prominent gerontologists who were advocating for second careers and volunteering and maintaining part of the community, in many ways are guilty of ageism, because even though they mean well and they're basing their recommendations on what they believe are sound understanding of getting old, they are in many ways prejudiced against some forms of getting old as opposed to others.
I see ageism in places like advertising specifically. I see ageism, and it's funny, in technology oftentimes. And it's been interesting to actually experience that. I got a new car, and I felt like my learning curve to even be able to drive it and navigate it was pretty exponential because of all the technology. Once I got it, I got it. But I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come right back, and we're going to talk a lot more about aging in place. Hi, I'm Dr. Debbie Lines. Design elements are psychologically and physically supportive and conducive to health and wellness. To learn more about what Lines on Design can do for you, for more information on certified aging in place and facilitative and supportive design, look for us at linesondesign.com. That's L-Y-N-E-S on design.com. We are back here on Aging in Place. We are here with Dr. Stephen Gallant, and thank you for joining us again. We're having an interesting conversation about what it really means to age in place. As we get older, what are two goals that you think people really want to achieve as they get older?
So these goals are in particular a relation to where they live, where people live. And there's two types of emotional experiences that I've talked about in my work that I think are most important for older people to achieve if they are going to have that harmonious relationship with where they live.
Mm-hmm.
And the first of these goals is the idea you want to live in a place that's comfortable, that's enjoyable, that has relatively few hassles,
okay,
that where you feel a sense of belonging, where you have generally positive happier kinds of experiences than not. And that's, and I've actually referred to those kinds of experiences. When you achieve that, when you achieve these experiences, I refer to older people as being in their residential comfort zones.
Okay,
residential comfort zone.
Now, are you talking geography for that also?
I'm talking, forget the geography per se. I'm talking about the place in which older people live. Their house.
Okay.
Their neighborhood,
their
community. They want to live in a place where they feel comfortable in their community. They want to live in a place where they live in a house where it has relatively few hassles to just to live in it. So that's the first major goal. And obviously, it's a subjective experience. It's what people feel as opposed to what experts measure themselves. It's what older people feel is a comfortable place to live.
Makes sense.
So the second set of second emotional goal is, will also, I think, resonate with your viewers, and that is older people want to feel competent. They want to feel in control. They want to feel that people are not pushing them around, that they can achieve things under their own prowess. They want to feel that they have the ability, the capability to control their lives.
And their environment.
They don't want to be whipped around by others. Now, of course, we want that feeling throughout the life cycle, of course, but it's especially important in older people because they often feel that their individual competence, their health, their cognitive abilities, everything from simple memory, perhaps not as vibrant, as intact, mm-hmm. as strong as they were in their younger years. So it's very important then that they live in a place, a house, a neighborhood, a community, where they feel they can, they are capable mm-hmm. of achieving their everyday needs and goals. So very different than comfort, which implies enjoyment and feeling good. The control aspect, the competence control, implies that you feel that you are capable of doing things.
And so what I hear you say is two things that are super important as we age: feeling comfortable and feeling competent.
And when you feel competent, by the way, you're in what I call your residential mastery zone. You feel empowered.
Exactly.
You feel competent. And when you achieve both your comfort experiences and your control experiences, that's when I feel that you're in the right place to live.
So let's talk a little bit about how we achieve both of those. Because my first thought is, I live with my 92-year-old dad.
Yes.
And in the past 2 years, he decided he wasn't going to drive anymore. He retired from cardiology. He moved in with his daughter. Yikes. Okay. He lost his wife. So there are a lot of huge events that have taken place. And it's funny because the family, as we all talk, we're like, what can we do for dad? What should we do? And he basically shared exactly what you're saying. Let him be as autonomous as he can be. In fact, and just laughing because I've read your articles, he has an Uber account and Amazon is his best friend.
Absolutely. Because that gives him the best of both worlds. He's able to obtain goods that make him feel happy and comfortable, and he's able to do it as much as possible without relying on you.
Exactly.
Because he doesn't want to rely on you, frankly.
Exactly.
In fact, I mean, the fact that you, of course, are the penultimate example of the good daughter who takes their older father in their house. And that's exceptional rather than the norm. Yes.
Well, going back, it was funny though, the discussions that we had without me even knowing what I was talking about revolved exactly around what you're talking about. In searching for a place for him and my mom at the time, it was really more about where they would be most comfortable, but could retain the most autonomy. So comfort and autonomy or competency were really important. And it involved a geographic move from Ohio to South Carolina. So it is really interesting.
Was that willingness? Was he happy to do that? He was okay?
I think he, to be honest, I think my mom had dementia. I think he reached a point where he felt like he needed more emotional support for her. And he was willing to make the shift. But I think he had some definite expectations about what that would look like. Mm-hmm. And I love multi-generational living anyway. I've got 10 grandkids. And so I would say one of the biggest gifts is also the biggest obstacles. And that's being in a world of little people again.
So you have daughters or sons or?
I have a son and two daughters. And my son and daughter live here, one with 4 children and one with 2.
See, once again, you're somewhat exceptional
in that
you have nearby, and you have daughters, because we know that the most important family member who is likely to care for an older parent is the female. Is the woman. Daughters are much more likely to be caregivers than sons, and indeed daughter-in-laws are more often to be caregivers than sons. So I always told my students, I said, well, if you don't have a daughter, make sure your son marries a caring wife.
Wife, so that, yes, probably very wise, isn't it?
So that you can get help from her.
At what point do we need to begin to prepare for aging? I don't know how to say this gracefully. How do we destigmatize it? Because it seems like in many cultures, yeah. as you get old, being old is viewed as wise and it's a revered position. And here, oftentimes I feel like it's, you know, do I need to get a facelift? Do I need to do this? Do I need to right. do that? Because I don't want to look old. And I feel...
Well, my daughter's a dermatologist. And
oh, Lord. She would... Yeah. So that's a good thing.
So what is happening actually in our society right now is that there's considerable incentive to try to deny that you're getting old. And once again, the intentions of the powers to be have been in a good place. The idea that you don't want to, show the physical or the cognitive, the mental signs of getting older. But the flip side, of course, is that when you try to deny the idea that you're getting older, you also are probably likely to put off making plans for when the body does sometimes wear out in one way or the other. And so that's a conundrum.
It is a conundrum. We're going to take a break, come right back for a third segment. Stay with us.
For more podcast episodes, links, information, and media inquiries, please visit our website at agingInPlacePodcast.com as we transition through life with the comfort and ease you deserve. Discover how you can create a home that will adapt to you as you journey through life and the changes it will bring. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as our host, Debbie Lines, and her expert guests discuss relevant topics to creating a home for all decades in life. Don't miss our weekly episodes of Aging in Place podcast for every stage in life.
We are back here on Aging in Place, and I really, really appreciate you joining us. We're having a fascinating conversation. One of the things you wanted to talk about, and I think now's a great time to do that, is really about just being connected to a community as a whole. What does that look like?
So there are, at the risk of simplifying, oversimplifying, there are two pathways to changing how our houses and our neighborhoods and our communities look like.
Okay.
One is to, for example, make sure that you have a house that you don't have to negotiate too many stairs. You don't have to worry, try to eliminate hazards in the house that would increase your likelihood of falling, for example. Make sure the lighting is good. Make sure the floor surfaces are not slippery, etc. Make sure you live in a neighborhood that has congenial neighbors and so on. Mm-hmm. So one way to achieve a place to live that is more congruent, more consistent with your needs and goals,
yes,
is to what we say change the form, change the physical appearance. The alternative, and not necessarily more important, but certainly equally important, is to make sure that you can connect to those people, those services, those goods that are so essential to maintaining your comfort and also to ensure that you feel competent and in control.
Well, let me ask you about...
And that's the connection factor.
Well, and connection's really important too, because I worry that isolation is a huge factor in and negative contributor to actually aging and being unhappy, depression, things like that. So what I hear you say is this connectivity is really a health and wellness issue as much as anything.
Absolutely. And consider the classic example of someone losing their license to drive, mm-hmm. and they're living in America's suburbs, which are so dependent on driving to get around. All of a sudden, the possibility exists that those taken for granted trips to get groceries, to visit friends,
yes.
to go to your church or synagogue or mosque or whatever, suddenly becomes in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
And that clearly is an example of how the breakdown in the connection between people and their community have bad consequences.
What's interesting to me is in at least in this area, and I know in the Northeast quite a bit, and actually my daughter's in California, my other daughter's in California, is a lot of telehealth, where if folks have minor aches and pains, sore throats, colds, things like that, rather than having to get out, because I know that's a big issue for my dad, is just even get, there's no running to Walgreens anymore. You know, everything and involves planning.
And I think you put your finger on one major category of changes that are taking place in this country today. And that is, we're finding new ways to enable older people to connect to the people and the goods and the services and the health care that they so need. Think of how recent something like you told me your father uses, yeah, Uber or Lyft.
Yes, yes.
Which is far more convenient, for example, mm-hmm, than the traditional dial a ride or paratransit service, where you have to make the call 24 hours in advance. Mm-hmm. And think about the stigma of dependency and the lack of spontaneity, yes, that imposes on anybody, certainly an older person who wants to feel competent and in control. Mm-hmm. Uber suddenly puts that accessibility much easier in their hands. There's no stigma. Take something like Meals on Wheels, right?
Yes.
We're all familiar with Meals on Wheels. It's not just a program for people who can't get out. It's also a program for people who have less income as well. But no question, however, that for many older people, that would again be a stigma.
Exactly.
Losing competence, losing control, not the way to get older.
No, as opposed to, again, using my dad, because he's my perfect case study, is he now has found out that Kroger's and some of the other, but he's a Kroger guy, Kroger's will deliver groceries to him. And so he now can get a hot meal, or if he doesn't like what I'm serving for dinner, he can order some specific things that he would like me to prepare. It's ever so convenient for him.
and think of all the services now.
Exactly.
That prepare meals.
Yes.
No longer is it a stigma. It's actually a status
cool thing.
Symbol.
That's right.
It's a status symbol.
Uber Eats.
So once again, this we have a total change of mentality where you don't feel incompetent getting your meal delivered to you, uh-uh, but in fact you feel competent, control, that you're performing like people of any age group.
Well, and I will say one more thing, Dr. Stephen, because this is really fun for me, because it's bringing home all of your research and every point you make. My dad FaceTimes instead of sending birthday cards now. Because he can't go get them. He can't get them to the mail. And I just thought about that as you're making these points. I'm trying to relate it kind of to a real scenario.
Well, your next step.
Okay.
You probably won't need it, but he might enjoy it. Technology, of course, is advancing at an incredibly rapid pace in terms of providing options for older people to remain in their own homes. One day you'll, right now it's very expensive, you'll purchase a robotic pet.
Don't even.
We have good examples. We have a replica. It's very expensive right now. It's about $8,000-$9,000 of a baby seal.
Oh.
And it has all kinds of emotional responses. When you hold it a certain way, it squeals and of course the cynic will say, well, really, are you trying to tell us that a robotic seal can be a social companion?
Absolutely.
Not completely, mm-hmm, but it certainly adds one important ingredient to combating loneliness. And think about that robotic seal then saying to you, well, Debbie, it's time for you to take your medications. Debbie, it's time for you to, there's an appointment you have, make sure,
yeah,
you make the appointment. So what we're doing is bringing communications that used to be only accessible if you could go outside your home. Mm-hmm. We're bringing all kinds of communications and messages and information and support into the home without the older person having to leave.
You know, we've only got about a minute, and I really want people to know how to connect with you. I think your writing is a lot of fun, and it's packed with takeaways and information. So can I ask you to pitch your book for me and your blog and how people can really connect?
Sure. Well, the easiest way to learn how I think about the world is to buy my book.
Yeah.
It's called Aging in the Right Place. This was an attempt by me to say, you know, sometimes aging in place is not the only way to go about things. Mm-hmm. Your father, for example, decided to move and move into your house. So what we want to do is find ways for older people to age in the right place, which is very individualistic. It depends very much on individuals and their life circumstances and their situation. And so aging in the right place essentially says there's no one right place for you to grow old, that it depends on your lifestyles and your abilities. And for every individual, there is a right place to grow old, but they have to be reflective and thoughtful and think about where that right place would be.
Well, I have to say this. I would love to have you join us again. I think that we didn't even hit the tip of the iceberg. This was just kind of a broad spectrum overview of the things that you've done, and hopefully a teaser so that we can dive a little deeper into some of these things, because I think that with our population growth and the way that it is growing and the demographic, it's certainly pertinent information. So again, sir, thank you very much for joining us. Do you have a website where we might find you?
The best way to find what I've written is simply to search on Google Stephen Gallant. Mm-hmm. And that'll
do it.
Right. That'll do it.
Well, thank you. And we want to thank all of our listeners, too, for joining us here on Aging in Place. Have a wonderful week. Hi, I'm Dr. Debbie Lines, and thank you for listening to Aging in Place for Any Stage in Life. We would like to ask you all to give us a review. Of course, preferably 5 stars. Thank you again. And we hope you enjoyed Aging in Place for Any Stage in Life.
Don't do it. Be lazy. I tell you what, I believe the invention of a lazy Susan far beats sliced bread. Just saying. I have them everywhere. Having been born close to the sidewalk, reaching for everything has been my way of living. Even when I did reach that shelf, I end up removing 6 cans of beans before locating the tomato soup in the back. But not any longer. One quick spin, and not only can I reach that tomato soup, but the milk glass behind the wine goblets and the shampoo behind the hairspray. I have lazy Susans everywhere. In my closet to keep my spare toiletries on the top shelf. This, by the way, is a great place to keep your medications that need to be away from children. One turn, and you can see if you need to buy that cough medicine before it keeps you up all night. In my craft room, a lazy Susan is wonderful. When it comes to painting, and for those who bake, placing that cake on a lazy Susan, and you will frost like a pro. Who knew being a lazy Susan would become so valuable?
Talking to Dr. Stephen Gallant was really fascinating, and I think we touched on the tip of the iceberg with some really concrete things that he has. So if we're talking about a takeaway, I would say my takeaway is this. If you have parents, which most of us do, I think it would be really important to buy his book, Aging in the Right Place. My takeaway is this. It's not just aging in place. It really is aging in the right place. Thank you all for joining us here on Aging in Place for Any Stage in Life.
Aging in Place podcast is hosted by Debbie Lines and produced by Henrik de Gior. If you have any comments or questions, send an email to debbie@agingInPlacePodcast.com. We would love to hear from you. If you're interested in advertising or sponsoring this podcast, email us at pr@agingInPlacePodcast.com. Thank you for listening to Aging in Place Podcast.